You know, my next guest said that as far back as he can remember, when he was a small boy, he was surrounded by law enforcement. His childhood started out with constant daydreaming of becoming an accomplished police officer. Tony Malik did that, and he's currently a full-time police officer. He's also the creator and owner of one of the biggest first responder brands out there, The Badge Life. You do not want to miss this great episode with Tony Malik, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in. I know you got many options, but you come back to the CJ Evolution Show. Thank you so much. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing it. If you are not subscribed to the show, please subscribe, share it with your family and friends, and give us that 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We sure would appreciate it. You know, police accountability is a very important topic, not only among police executives everywhere, but the community as a whole. I want to tell you about a great company that can help you with this, Officer Survey. Officer Survey helps build profound relationships with your community by allowing them to provide feedback after every dispatch call, plus an early intervention system to identify issues at the earliest possible stage so that intervention and support can be offered before it's too late. Folks, you need this service for your law enforcement organization. Again, head over to officersurvey.com and schedule a demo today. Such an honor to be partnered with a great company like Detectichem. This amazing and innovative company is helping keep our brave men and women safer by offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of their hands, detecting illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. This app-based technology is a must-have for your law enforcement organization. Head over to cjevolution.com and see the link to Detectichem. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my next guest on the show, Tony Malik. He's the CEO, creator of The Badge Life. He's also a Leo, having a long, distinguished, and honorable career. Tony, you there, brother? Thanks for being here.
I'm here. Thanks for having me, CJ.
Well, thank you, man, for your service, first and foremost. And I always ask people, Tony, why did you get into law enforcement?
As I was growing up, I used to watch Cops, you know, back in the late...
What you gonna do?
Exactly, back in the 90s. And I remember, I think it used to come on at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And after dinner, I'd sit down with my dad on the couch and we would just watch Cops. And it was, and I just loved it. And really that what piqued my interest in joining law enforcement. And as I went through school and college and I looked into it, I remember our school SRO, Officer Duncan, and I used to see him at my local gym and I used to talk to him about law enforcement and he used to always show up in his patrol car. And he was literally the best officer I've ever met in my life. And he'd let me, get in the police car, play around and stuff. It was something that I was like, wow, I really want to do this. And then I just followed that path and never looked back.
Now, did you have like friends that, cause I know what happened when I'm a little older than you, like we talked about, but I remember having friends that were like, dude, you become a cop. No, I'm not your friend anymore. And I was like, okay, good riddance. Yeah. I guess you're not my friend. Did you have experiences like that when you decided that you wanted to follow your path?
Not to a point where somebody just came out and said, oh, I'm not going to be your friend. But I did see my circle of friends getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Because, when you're in high school or even college, you'll go to these dorm parties, whatever, and then you'll see people do some stuff. And you're like, oh, cool. Yeah, it's kind of fun, whatever. But as you start, carving your path and where you want to go, I mean, just naturally you start, taking a step back. Like, okay, I really don't want to be around these type of people because I have a bigger goal to accomplish. And as I did that, at the end of the day, I ended up with maybe, 8 to 10 friends versus, 40, 50 people that I knew. So that's probably the only thing. And I still have, friends that are obviously in law enforcement and my other childhood friends. I think if you become a police officer, you'll automatically start seeing your circle of friends getting smaller and smaller.
Isn't that interesting? They're like, oh my God, he's one of them.
Right, right. when I was in St. Louis, I'd get a text from my buddy who's in Tennessee. Hey, bro, I just got pulled over for a speeding ticket. Can you do anything about it? Like, dude, I'm like miles away. Like, I mean, I'm not the president. I can't just pick up the phone and be like, hey, can you help me out? I mean, it doesn't work that way.
I used to get annoyed sometimes, and people don't know, but I used to get annoyed when I would go to like a party or something with my wife, and, you know, some parent would come up to me and say, you know, my son got a underage drinking ticket. Is there anything you can do? And I just met them. And I was like, right. I have no idea who, no idea who your son is.
But you know, back in the day, there was, I'm sure it still exists now that, you know, I'm on the federal side. I don't really interact with a whole lot of street cops anymore. But you know, back in the day, if I wrote somebody a ticket and then like, you know, and then an officer from the agency called me saying, hey, Malik, you just pulled over, I don't know, my cousin or somebody, can you do anything about the ticket? And I'd be like, absolutely. I would just go pull the ticket back. I'd write the void on the back and send it to court, and that would be end. But now you can't.
You can't do that stuff anymore.
And now it's completely changed. You're like, I can change it to a seatbelt, but you know, but even so, like things have changed so rapidly over the years that I don't even know if that exists anymore. To be honest with you,
I remember, you know, and you heard of this, obviously, you know, you pull over a cop for speeding. I mean, obviously, no, you're not going to give a cop a speeding ticket. Now that has changed. I guess it depends on where you're at, but I saw cops giving cops speeding tickets now. I mean, it just depends on where you're at, I guess.
Yeah. And I don't know if any state patrol troopers listen to your podcast or not, but you know, they always get the bad rap about, you know, pulling us over. But, you know, I live in Maryland now, right outside DC. And I've been pulled over once. When I had just first moved here, I did not know their law that you can't text and drive. It's common sense, I know. But, you know, in some states, it's a law. In some states, it's not. Yeah. So I was just texting a buddy of mine. So he got pulled over and he walked
in.
Good
job, Tony.
Yeah, I know, right? So he goes, hey, I pulled you over for, you know, texting. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I just moved here, what have you. And then he goes, oh, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I'm a police officer. He goes, oh, okay, cool. You know, he's like, oh, so, and then see you later, have a nice day. So, you know, so that's the only interaction I've had with state patrol. They were good, but I've heard a lot of bad stories about other state troopers and stuff, you know?
Yeah. So you've had a long career. Again, you mentioned federal level you're currently on and then local level. What are some of the, and there's probably a lot, but what are some of the toughest things, incidents that you've had to endure, Tony, throughout your career, go through?
I would say the Ferguson riots. I was part of the Ferguson riots when the whole Mike Brown shooting took place back in 2014. Mm-hmm. That was probably the toughest part of my career, just because, you know, first of all, you're not prepared for stuff like that.
It developed so quickly,
developed overnight. And no matter how much training in the academy you go through, it just not exist. I mean, this is completely, it was just one of those things where you're just like, you just walk up and people are just right in your face. And then next thing you know, you got to look up because they're throwing bricks at you and stuff, what have you. So that was probably the toughest part of, you know, being in law enforcement for me. But again, you know, when I was in St. Louis, I worked with North County, which really bordered Ferguson and St. Louis City, their 6th district, which was extremely busy. I mean, you'd have an average of between 4 to 6 homicides a week. And it was just extremely busy. So you always had to stay alert around your surroundings, what have you. And then, you know, the Mike Brown shooting happened. And then after that, it was just, I mean, the policing, I saw policing completely, you know, change, and not for the better, for the worse.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, it's been challenging since then. And then obviously every time you turn on the news, unfortunately there's some sort of an incident. And now, you know, early this year with the Minneapolis incident, it just seems like we just, you know, every time we take, you know, one step forward, we take 5 steps back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just now when we get back to Ferguson for a minute, brother. Now, did they offer, I mean, I'm assuming they did, even though I hate to assume, peer support and everything like that, because I mean, that mentally just takes a toll on officers when they're, you know, I mean, like you said, it develops so quickly. Now, you know, people in their face telling them they suck and F you and all this other stuff. Was there a lot of, you know, peer support, you know, and other kind of counseling for the officers that went through that?
Yeah. So I worked for the St. Louis County Police Department. We had a pretty good support system in place. Mm-hmm. And after that, our commanders, they would, you know, randomly check up on us. They would send us emails and they would like, hey, you know, we have these people available that you can speak with. And what they did was they also brought in a lot of the other officers that had been involved in other sort of like officer involved shootings, for example, or officers who had gone through other situations to kind of cope and bring us all so we can get their perspective, how to deal with a situation like this. So they did. So St. Louis County did do a really good job in, you know, providing us with the peer support, what have you. So I can't speak for Ferguson because I didn't work for Ferguson PD,
sure.
But I'm pretty sure it was fairly similar there. But again, one of the challenges is in a smaller department, and it always comes down to resources.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, but yeah, but to answer your question, St. Louis County, I think, did a fairly good job in trying to get us help if we needed it.
Now, what advice? I mean, it's a tough time, brother. You know that. Turn on the news. Like you said, everything's anti, well, not everything, but a lot of it is anti-cop. So what advice would you give somebody? I come to you and say, hey, Tony, man, you've been doing this a while. You were a cop for a while on the local level. That's what I want to do. Or even the federal level or state level. What advice would you give me, you know, wanting to get into a law enforcement career?
You have to be 110% sure that this is the job you want to do, because you're not going to get rich off of this. You'll get a decent paycheck coming in, again, depending on the jurisdiction you work for. Once you make your mind, you have to stick with it. I don't understand why guys and girls, they go through academy. They'll get into the best shape of their lives, and they'll become great shooters. They'll get the top PT award or top gun award, what have you. And then 2 or 3 months into field training, they would just quit. Like, I mean,
I've seen that. And I'm like, what in the hell? Why would you go through that?
And I think that I think the problem, there's a couple of problems, I would say. I think number one, I think police agencies across the country are hurting for bodies. So I think they make it sound like, oh my God, it's the best thing in the world. That's number one. I think that that's a fault on police agencies by being dishonest to the new recruits that are coming. And I think the number two is, with so much technology, you just name it, right? You got a 15, 20 year old kid now with a damn YouTube channel. And if it's successful, you're making hundreds and 200s and 300s of millions of dollars off that. So people see, like, making money is so much easier and doing less work. So people, they don't want to go out there. They don't want to work 12 hours in snow, and they don't want to, you know, get yelled at, and they don't want to get involved in officer involved shooting or put their hands on anybody. I remember I used to train, I trained a guy, and this kid had black belt, karate and all that stuff. And I'm like, because I spoke with the instructor at the academy, I'm like, hey, I'm getting so-and-so, kind of fill me in. And he'd be like, oh, he's great, blah, blah, blah. He's very proactive. You will have no problem with him. I said, all right, perfect. And I start training him, and we'd go to these domestics or home invasions or robberies. And this kid was scared of his own shadow. I'm just like, dude, you have a black belt. Like, let's go. Like, this guy's fighting us. Let's go hands on. Like, do some karate chop or something, right? Like, give him like upper kick or something. And he'd be so scared of his own shadow. I was so frustrated with this kid. I was just like, I just wanted to choke him. Like, how the hell did you even pass the academy? And I called the instructor, but I was like, dude, are you sure I got the same guy? And he goes, yeah, why? What issues are you having? And I told him, like, listen, last night we got a call for a man with a gun. We get to the street. I spotted the guy, put my spotlight on him, had him at gunpoint. And this kid just sat in his car. I had to verbally bring this subject to my car, have him prone out, and cuff him all by myself.
That's bullshit. That's bullshit.
This guy would just, he literally just sat in the driver's seat. And as soon as I cuffed the subject, I looked at him and I literally cussed him out. And then I had never written paper on anybody. And I just wrote a paper on this kid. And my captain, he read it the next morning. He woke this kid up. He brought him in. And he goes, what the hell happened last night? And I don't know what the explanation was, but 2 days later, they transferred him to a much quieter and slower precinct. And then he didn't even survive there. So, you know, 3 months in, he quit. So I was like, dude, like, why would you put yourself through all this stuff? I don't get it. I just don't.
And I think, you know, I think you hit it on the head a little bit, Tony, and you know, that we're, you know, I think departments are hurting. They obviously are. The attrition rates are through the roof. But I think the departments try to, you know, make it whatever, glamorous or more, for lack of a better word. But I think it falls on the individual too, 99% of it or 90% of it. Do some fucking homework, man. I mean, go on a ride along. I mean, do other things to get yourself prepared. We had a couple officers do the same thing, man. We had one officer before I retired who made it all the way through FTO program. She got to her shadow phase, which I'm sure that, you know, where you're acting independently with kind of an officer that's training, but they're not interacting. They're not like helping you at all. Unless, you know, of course shit hits the fan, but she quit. It's like went through 2 or 3 months of FTO or 2.5 months. And then one day she quit. And it's like, I mean, I would rather have people do it, I guess, on the front end, you know, before they get out, you know, but I just personally, I'm like, why would you invest all that time and all that sort of shit? But I don't know, man. But I agree with you. I mean, you God, 100%, 110%. This is what you have to do, or you want to do, because like you said, you're not going to get rich, mm-hmm. you know. And if you're just watching TV and the movies, thinking that it's going to be something like that, it's not like that, you know. So interesting.
But yeah, overall, I think it's a great job. I think it's very extremely rewarding. I do think if you get on it with a decent sized agency that has a SWAT, the K-9, or mm-hmm. your hostage negotiators, or your bomb squad, yeah. right? I think you can or detective bureau or a crime scene unit like we had. We had all sorts of stuff. So I think once you get onto a decent sized agency, you find your niche and you become like super good at it, almost become like a subject matter expert. I think you can have a phenomenal career. But I think if you're just going to get in and be just a local street cop just to stop people for, you know, speeding tickets, I don't think you can do that. Yeah, you have to do that to get to other levels. I get that. But if you work for a smaller agency, I mean, you may have the detective who's been a detective for like the last 27 years and he's not going anywhere. So you may not even get promoted for another 10, 15 years. So you have to really have some sort of a roadmap for yourself. How are you going to get there? Where you want to get and how you'll start achieving your goals? Because if you don't have that roadmap, I mean, you'll just be a lost soul.
Yeah. Yeah. One good aspect about the job. Off the top of your head, Tony, what do you think?
I'd go back to saying that it's a great job. I mean, it's a great profession. I think you can learn a lot. I think it makes you a better and more rounded human being. Maybe I'm biased, but I mean, there's some people I was like, oh my God, like, how do you survive? You're that, like, I mean, do you not even have common sense? And so I think looking from the law enforcement perspective, it just makes you a better, well-rounded human being.
Yeah. One bad thing.
You know, my money's not there, obviously. and you have to put up with people's crap. And that's it. I mean, again, it could take one bad apple that would ruin it for everyone. You could have the best community engagement programs. You could have the best relationship with your communities. But the problem is that one person, and doesn't even have to be in your own agency, it could be a bordering agency or even across the state, that makes that bad decision, you're going to feel the ripple effect in your community. And then they're going to start at demanding answers or more transparency or more accountability. And no matter how much you have done to build that, you're going to start losing that really, really fast if you don't have certain things in place.
Yeah, exactly. We were talking a little bit before we started about, and you remember Rodney King and all, you know, all that has come mm-hmm. after that, obviously all these other incidents recently. But I remember Rodney King reverberated for years, decades, you know, yeah, I think it's definitely going to take some time, but I like what you said. You're very right about being more proactive and getting things in place. So when, you know, what hits the fan, you know, you can deal with it or try to mitigate it, you know, and until it, you know, spirals out of control.
Right. Yeah. Well, one thing I don't like, and we had it at our agency too, is like their definition of building police community relationship is like, you know, have a donut with a cop program or what have you. First of all, I mean, you know, cops, they're known to eat donuts, right? So yeah, okay. So, you know, and then you meet, so this is the problem I have with that approach. So you are a captain or chief of police for let's say a 60 man agency, and you have a population of between 7 to 10 to 15,000, which is fairly average for a smaller agency. When you host these once a month meet donut with the cop program or what have you to build community engagement, you only have maybe 10 to 15 to 20 people that show up to this, people who are pro-law enforcement. The problem is you're not listening to the people who don't like law enforcement or what the problem is, so you can start addressing those problems.
Exactly.
The people can start trusting the police, right? So I don't like that approach. And the one chief of police I spoke with, he goes, yeah, once a year we send out like a survey with the water bill. And I was like, well, that's not – how do you –
So once a year, you're going to figure out what the problems are.
Right. And how do you quantify that? Like you send it to 10,000 people. Your average survey response rate is between 20 to 22%, which is very low. And you can't fix a problem based on just 22%. So I don't know. I just wish the agency would be a little bit more proactive instead of just every time keep blaming, oh, we don't have the budget for it. Well, you have a budget for it. You don't need to buy like 50 Tahoes. Okay. Just buy 48 Tahoes and then put the other, the two Tahoe budget towards your police engagement community. So,
well, there's so many different resources. I mean, you got social media. Most people have, you know, agencies are, you know, mostly, I think they should be engaged in social media. So that's just one aspect where you can reach out to people. Very cost effective, obviously. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take much, but it just takes creativity and an open mind, like we were talking about, Tony, before, where, you know, I think so many of these And I'll knock on police, you know, administrators for a minute. You know, they have this, they're locked in their mindset of, well, you know, this is how it's always been. And that's, you got to be able to adapt and change with the times, especially in this world we're living in where shit is changing very, very quickly.
Right. I think moving forward, I think we're going to end up with some sort of a internal database that monitors every single officer across the country. It's just the atmosphere and the tone of policing is completely changed than even when we had the whole Ferguson thing back in 2014. So I do think something like that is upon us. And I think that's just it, police chiefs, they're going to have two choices, either retire or adapt with the program. That's the only way out. So
I agree. Well, let's shift a little bit, bro. Let's talk about this badge life thing you got going on the side, which is huge. How did you start it? I mean, what got you started on your entrepreneurial journey?
So I've always been an entrepreneur. I come from a family background. We've had multiple businesses in our family. I mean, you name it, anything from a hair salon to something before Uber existed. My dad and my uncle had started a company for the airport. And literally it was Uber, but they didn't call it Uber. They just called it, they called it Trans Express or something along those lines. It was exactly the same thing. You download the app, you select a ride, come in. But again, my dad and my uncle, they weren't smart enough, like the Uber executives, to go out there and pitch their idea to venture capitalists and then get the money, whatever. Again, you know, they're in their like late 60s. So, and you know, and these Uber guys are in their early 30s. So of course, there's a 30-year, you know, generation gap there. So the thing was like, you know, so anyway, so I come up from a background of businesses. I've always wanted to start my own business. And you know, if you're an entrepreneur, I know you've watched Shark Tank. Everybody's watched Shark Tank. Mm-hmm. And one day I was just, you know, sitting in my patrol car, I was just like, man, I got to do something on the side, see if it works. And I've had a lot of other small businesses on the side, but nothing to the scale of the badge life. And I love fitness. I'm not a fitness guru or anything. I just like to go to the gym and working out. And I found that Under Armour was super expensive. I don't like Nike because they don't support law enforcement. So I was like, well, I don't really have a whole lot of choices out there for fitness apparel. So I started doing some research and I was like, you know, I really like these type of clothing. So why don't I get something built for myself? So I started designing stuff for myself. I'm not a designer, but I hired a designer and I kind of told him what my vision was. Mm-hmm. And he started putting some designs together for me. And then I, again, got online and found me a local apparel manufacturer here in Virginia. And I reached out to him. I was like, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. Can you help me out? And the guy's like, yeah, sure, this is what we do. So I was able to go there, test everything out. I loved it. And I started just wearing it. And then I was like, oh, let me put it on the website, see if it takes off. And then so I started actually my Instagram page, just I think it's only, I don't know, a year and a half, maybe 2 years old. And I changed the name to The Badge Life. I think it was a personal account, but I changed it to The Badge Life. And I started posting like police videos on there, you know, of the account went viral. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow. And of course, I was like, oh, I need to start leveraging this because, Instagram doesn't pay you like YouTube. They pay you for ads. So I was like, man, Instagram doesn't pay you. So what should I do? So I started putting stuff on the badge. My website on my profile. And one thing led to another. I mean, it just on its own word of mouth, you know how cops are. They just talk. So it just expanded. And then I started with, I think, like 4 shirts. And now I have like 25, 26 different type of shirts. I have shorts and weightlifting gym gear, hats. And a lot of the stuff I can't keep in stock, like it just keeps selling out. And no matter how much I order, so just like every entrepreneur, I started in my, I didn't have a garage. I started in my basement, like a little, our bedroom, spare bedroom. That's where I housed all my inventory. But as it took off, like so much, I went out, got a larger fulfillment center. So now all the orders that come in, that within the hour, they're shipped through the fulfillment center, just to kind of keep up with the demand. And just this, you know, the Black Friday and the Christmas thing, what have you. I mean, I've pretty much sold out almost a lot of my stuff. I still have, you know, some stuff left, obviously. But I'm kind of waiting for my inventory to dwindle down a little bit more. And then we're bringing in like so much new stuff. We're reconstructing stuff on the backside. I don't know. So it's. I'm glad it took off on its own, to be honest with you. But I wasn't expecting this. I was like, oh, if I can make a couple $100 a month from here.
Isn't that awesome when it kind of – it just takes off and, you know, you're like, and you're passionate, obviously you want to get back to law enforcement. And it's just amazing. And for interesting. So for those listeners out here who are listening to Tony Malik, you go to thebadgelife.com and Tony, that's you in the pictures, right? Modeling the men's gear and stuff, obviously not the female, but you're modeling all that stuff.
Yeah. I'm doing all stuff. Cause I actually wanted to, you know, just like cop, all the cops, you know, I don't have a lot of money. So I looked at a modeling agency, and just to get some photo shoots, they wanted upwards of like $5,000 to $7,000. And I was like, I'm not doing that. So
dude, you look great. You look good.
I just hired a photographer, and I was like, hey, this is what I'm looking for, and make me look good. So
that's so awesome.
So
66,000 followers, people, on Instagram. So you need to go over and follow the Badge Life on the Insta. Anywhere else people can find you?
I think we have like over 30,000 or so on on Facebook.
Facebook?
And a little over 10K on Twitter.
Jeez.
Yeah, so that, I think, and I know Snapchat doesn't give you the count total, but if I were to take a, I don't know, educated guess, I would say it's probably upwards of 5 to 10K on Instagram too. So on Snapchat. So we're like over 100,000 combined or more.
Now, what's the most rewarding aspect, Tony, about being an entrepreneur?
Honestly, I would just say go to the website and read the reviews. Like, okay, when I get those reviews come in and they're like, I love it, it's best thing ever, it's, you know, it's great, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, damn, that's good. It's like, and I always post, every time I get reviews, I'll get a notification in the email saying, hey, Joe Blow has left you a review. I would screenshot it, and I would always put it on Instagram. And if I can find the person, the customer, I would always try to tag them so they know that, you know, I appreciate the feedback. So, you know, that's been super rewarding. It's a lot of work, a lot of headache. I remember my first order I'd placed, it was like $5,000. And it was, I mean, again, $5,000 is still a lot of money today, but it was a lot of money. And man, the sizing was all wrong. And that's not what I got in the samples. And I was like, what the hell do I do now? So I ended up just going to a local shelter, and I just donated all of it.
Oh,
I was like,
that's awesome, dude.
So I was like, I mean, I couldn't return it, obviously. And no. I was like, I don't want to sell, because this is my first impression to my customers. I don't want to just make a quick buck and they're pissed off at me. I'd rather give something away for free and have a lifetime customer than try to make 30, 40 bucks off you, and then you never come back. And then you tell 50 other people, hey, his crap product is crap, you know? And I just didn't want that. So I just donated everything and then kind of restarted all over again. So,
yeah. You know, I love what you said about, you know, I mean, it's, you know, the rewarding part of being an entrepreneur is getting those reviews. I'm the same way with my show, because every once in a while I'll get a show, you know, a review that says, you know, you suck and all this other stuff. Right. And I'm like, but those good ones, they keep me going, man. That fuels me. And I'm like, I love this, you know, just so passionate about it. So if there was one big pain in the ass, kind of biggest headache that you could give advice to somebody out there listening right now who wants to kind of start on their own journey. And you and I talked, Tony, before. I think a lot of cops out there, they want to do other shit on the side, but so many of them have that roadblock or mental block. Oh, I can't do it. But what is the biggest challenge that you would, you know, that you would give somebody listening?
You just got to do it. I mean, just do it. I mean, don't just wing it. You know, if you're going to do it, you got to make sure you're in it 100%. That's the thing. And if you have a family, I mean, you got to realize that your business almost becomes part of your family. It's like raising a child. You got to deal up with your website, your hosting, your designs, or any business you start. I know a lot of the officers, a lot of my friends, you know, they got into consulting business. But again, same thing with them. Same. Nothing changes. You have to allocate time and dedication to your business. Like, you know, you host podcasts. You can't just come on. You have to put prep time in it. What type of question you're going to ask. I'm sure you've probably done a little bit of research about me. That's how you found out about the Badge Life. So there's a lot more involved. You can't just wing it, and you can't just throw up a website and think, oh, customers are going to come. Or I'm going to tell my friends about it. A lot of things I guess to test the market, it's not bad. Like a lot of these print on demand officers are just creating their print on demand. They're just slapping on any logo or any thin blue line or a Punisher thing on there, hoping it will sell. My thing is, you got to be original. Like Badge Life, yeah, I got a couple of things with thin blue line on it and a couple of Punisher wrist straps. But if you really go back and look at my website, everything is original. I mean, you're not going to find that on Amazon or any other cop's website. That's just me. I'm like, you know what? I have to create something that is original to the brand. I don't want to copy other people. So I think that's another thing, what you have to do. You have to be original. You can't just copy off other people and expect to be successful, because then you start bidding, oh, who's the cheapest, right? And then you always lose, because then you have no money to advertise or grow.
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, it takes time, man, too. I mean, everything you said, I agree 100%, but I would say another thing I would tell people who are listening, if you're going to start something, like you said, go all in, but you got to be consistent. You got to, because there's going to be times when you want to quit. And we live in this instant gratification society where I think most of us want shit like tomorrow or yesterday. And a lot of people just quit because they're not making millions in a day or two.
Right. Yeah. And I know you and I had talked about, you know, before starting the podcast about quitting. And obviously, you know, without giving away what we're working on the back end, this tech platform that we're working on, right, to help officers and community, what have you. There's literally every single day I wake up, I'm like, I just don't want to do this anymore because there's always some sort of a damn, because the problem with technology is you're always going to have a problem, and it's not a small problem that you can fix. It's a big problem. But honestly, what keeps me going is like, you have to, I listen to a bunch of podcasts. Like I told you earlier, I read a lot of books, and you listen to other founder stories. And you just, I don't know. I just love like, you know, how these founders overcame so much to get to where they are today. And I was like, you know what? I'm only in the beginning stages. So you have to continue to struggle and continue to move forward. But if you have a strong vision and you have a strong head, brain, you'll move forward. You just have to adapt and overcome. That's it.
And surround yourself with those right people, folks. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, you got to have this, that right crew that are pumping you up and surrounding you and giving you that encouragement to keep going.
And to add to that, I love being around the cops, but if you're running a business, you do not want to be around the cops because they're so damn salty people.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, oh, it's not going to work. It sucks, bro, blah, and all this stuff. And you're just going to quit. So if you're going to run a business, you need to surround yourself with other entrepreneurs, like you said.
I remember when I was retired, I had cops saying, oh, you're going to be back. I was like, uh-huh. Yeah.
No. If you put your mind something to it, you have to do it. Otherwise, just don't do it. Otherwise, it's a waste of time and waste of money. And then if you don't have a whole lot of money, it's a complete waste. I mean, a lot of the officers I know, they work secondary just to make ends meet. So if you're one of those guys that's, you know, getting off after 12-hour shifts, now you have to go stand somewhere for 4 hours for $100. I mean, you know, and if you want to start a business, you got to give 100% to it. You can't just wing it.
Yeah. Very good advice. Tony Malik, CEO, founder, Badge Life. Brother, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a great conversation. And again, everything we talked about, Tony, and the listeners are going to be linked up in the show notes, all of Tony's social, including the one and only badgelife.com. Brother, anything we can do for you in the future, please let me know.
I will. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.